Stay in the know with Radio 2000 Podcast.
So, a few things that we wanted to just touch on, you know, just have a quick chat about. Let's start with, if you can maybe just help us through with the interpretation of Section 47 1E. You know, the IEC's lodged appeal to the Constitutional Court, right? Regarding former President Zuma's validity to contest for a seat in Parliament, right? Representing MK Party. Let's explain what that actually is and what's the background there.
Okay, first of all, the Bill of Rights enshrines rights as well as duties of citizens and other people. Section 19 states that every citizen has got the right to make political choices, including being part of a political party, to participate in the activities of a political party. Now, when you are going to campaign or you're going to be a part of the National Assembly, it's part of activities of a political party that a citizen has, not a person in South Africa, only citizens. So it starts from Section 19 under the right to exercise political choices. Okay. From there, because we're going to elections on the 29th of May, each party presents its list. Section 47 states that every person who's eligible to vote in national elections can be a member of the National Assembly, except for the five, which I'm not going to mention of all of them. Specifically, I'll read to Section 47 1E that says no person can be a member of the National Assembly if the person was convicted of an offense and sentenced to more than 12 months without the option of a fine, unless 5 years has elapsed since that sentence.
Okay.
So that is what the sentence says. The Constitution is not a criminal procedure or a civil act. It's a constitution that relates to what it says. Like there's a principle of interpretation that says words must be given their ordinary grammatic meaning in the context in which they appear. A sentence can only mean one thing, that if you have been convicted to 12 months without the option of a fine, you are ineligible to be a member of the National Assembly. Now, when parties formulate their list, it's their duty to ensure that they comply with Section 47 for eligibility. It's not up to the IEC to do that. They must do the homework first before submitting the list to make it easier. That's the first point that you must realize.
Okay, hold on. Let's hold it there. Now, let's relate that to former President Zuma.
Yeah. Okay, all right. The matter was his name was submitted. There was an objection, and the commission upheld the objection. Then it went to the electoral court, which ruled in his favor. Now the order was made without reasons accompanying it, so we do not know. Maybe this week will be given the reasons, and the electoral court has appealed without giving reasons why it is appealing. So we're now on both sides we're left in a vacuum to speculate what are the reasons for the upholding of the case for the MK party, and what are the reasons for appeal. You understand? But all I can say is that although the electoral act says the electoral court is the highest body on election matters, it does not deprive the constitutional court in terms of Section 167-3A of hearing appeals from any court as long as A is a constitutional matter. If it's a constitutional matter, it can hear it. So as I said, since Section 19 and Section 47-1E are constitutional matters, the matter can go to the highest court in the land, the constitutional court, to hear it. That is what the IEC has done. There's been some people have got misgivings why the IEC is appealing when it's not a party. My simple answer is this. It was taken to court. It's got the right to appeal further, because it was that was taken to court. Section 34 says any person who's got a gripe with any person may take that matter to court, including appealing against it. However, it's not clear whether it's an appeal or seeking clarity, because the three grounds that we can think about are the one of who must determine must go to the National Assembly. Mm. The legal team of MK says it is not the IEC to do that. It looks at qualification, not membership. The membership is determined by the National Assembly from day one when it's sworn in or taken an oath. My respectful disagreement with that is that it cannot be so. The National Assembly, as soon as members take an oath or take an affirmation, they must get on with the business of making laws, not looking around them, who amongst them qualifies or not. It's just to simplify things. It's like just like a soccer team or a rugby team. Just before it enters the match, they have to check who amongst them is fit, you know, and is fit to be part of the team. That is for the staff, the coaching staff, to do so long before the match. The coaching staff, in this analogical example, being the IEC. The IEC sees matters regarding elections. Mm. In the recent case of 2 months ago of the Labour Party, which took the IEC to the High Court, outside the Electoral Court, to say that the deadline for submission of members' lists was not fair, so they want the IEC to change it. Judge Mooki in the Gauteng High Court said the IEC has got jurisdiction on all matters relating to elections, so its jurisdiction is extensive. I don't have the right to hear this. So similarly, it's not the National Assembly that has to do that job. It's the IEC that must do the job. So maybe that's one of the reasons why they seek that clarity. The second reason is that there's a judge, Janet Love, who made a statement long before to say that Jacob Zuma does not qualify, etc. They are saying, therefore, she should not have said with the commission to decide on Mr. Zuma's eligibility. She should have recused herself. My respectful disagreement again on that is that before the hearing started, before the Electoral Court, they should have said, one amongst you has bias, we have got a reasonable apprehension, which is a key principle for bias. We have got a reasonable apprehension that Ms. Neod, one of your judges, Janet Love, is not going to be biased. You do that before the proceeding starts, not at the end, in arguing, because by keeping quiet when you're arguing, when the case starts, it means you're approving of your presence. The principle of law also remains. You cannot approve on the one hand and disapprove on the other. You cannot approbate and disapprobate. That is a contradiction. You can't at the end and then argue that, because it will seem as if you accepted that. The last one is one that is contentious, one of the sentence.
Mm-hmm.
Is the determination on the sentence or remission? Mr. Zuma was got remission after 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
My respectful argument is that what has to be determined is what was imposed by the court, that is the sentence of 15 months, not 3 months. On that day, on the 27th of April, which happens all the day, the president, in a spirit of reconciliation between low-risk offenders and the nations, he gives remission to all those not more than 2 months without the option of a fine. You know, it's a fine. So anyone who sentenced for up to 2 months, that is going to happen also on the 27th of April. So all those that were sentenced not beyond 2 months, two years, get a remission. If someone now, if people were sentenced for different periods, some 7 months, some 8 months, 1 year, etc., those people, their sentences do not run up to the time that they were released. It's what they've served, not they were sentenced. I'll make an example that can be clear. If today, Monday, someone gets 5 years imprisonment, but he or she dies on Friday, the sentence is not 5 days, the day of death. The sentence is still 5 years, but it was interrupted by death.
Uh-huh.
The sentence of 15 months was interrupted by remission. The sentence of whatever can be interrupted by whatever, but it remains that as long as he lives, the former president will have that 50-month sentence. This sentence, there are only two reasons or grounds which will not have applied. If he had applied for a presidential pardon, means that once you get that pardon after those many years, it in law you are taken as if you are never convicted or sentenced in the first place. When you write a CV or you tell someone you are not committing a lie when you say I was never convicted of a false offense, because the pardon removes all that, expands all that. Unlike a parole, if they can say I was sentenced but I got a parole, that's a pardon. Or if a person appealed against the sentence, you appeal against your 15-month sentence, then it's changed to less. Then what it was appealed to is your new sentence. But as you know, The reason why MK Party was formed is because Jacob Zuma is against the ANC's Cyril Ramaphosa. There was no way on earth he could have applied for pardon from him. So it was out pardon. It is an appeal. Mm. It's out for the appeal. I'm not saying I'm right, but this is, I think, is the reason why the IEC is appealing. It does not make sense.
So
with
basically,
due respect,
yes. Just for my understanding here, so you're saying the commission wants the Constitutional Court to basically issue an order saying Uthi, former President Zuma, is not eligible to run, right? And then setting aside the Electoral Court's order.
It wants clarity because it's not clear what it is. There are two possibilities. Either it wants clarity what the situation is, or it wants that decision to be set aside as being wrong. And the IEC, the IEC has to be firm and bold about this. It is one of the Section 9 institutions that is there to ensure that citizens' rights to fair and free elections are upheld. It should act without fear, favor, or prejudice, whoever it is that is dealing with. So if it happens to someone that people are afraid of, it must go on boldly and affirm itself. Otherwise, it means its responsibility as an entity is a mockery. It will not be able in future to determine who qualifies or not qualify. And then you ask ourselves the million-dollar question, what is the duty of the IEC except to manage elections? And that can't be it. Yeah. It must start from the beginning right up to the end in terms of ensuring or pursuing our vibrant democracy without, again, fear, favor, or prejudice. Thank you.
Let's do this. Let's allow our callers and, in fact, our listeners to call in or to send us voice notes. They can call in on 086-000-2479, or they can send us your voice notes on 060-584-2250. Yeah. All right. So that's the one part that I wanted to touch on. And of course, if anybody else wants to hone in on this one, you are more than welcome to. But the other one that I wanted us to look at is a very interesting letter that we got from one of our listeners. It says, let me just read it to you. It's fairly long, but let me just read it to you.
Okay.
It says, I have a problem with my brother-in-law. He's been swearing at me every time he's drunk since the year 2022. Every time when he's swearing at me, I just keep quiet and ignore his vulgar words. On the 2nd of January 2024, he was swearing at me as usual and I ignored him. My husband went out, so he saw the opportunity to come into our room and continue swearing at me. I was not paying attention to him as always. He then spitted his saliva on me. Part of it went on my cheek. So I then told him to get out of our room and said he continued swearing and calling me, a female dog. I'm not going to say the word, but yeah, that's what it is. I said, I so wish that our neighbor can go to the protection order against you like he says he would, because you are very rude. He came into our room again, pulled me outside with the mop and hit me. My protection order return date was on the 20th of March, 2024, where he advised that he is not in agreement with what I wrote in my affidavit. So he now has to go and write his affidavit. So we are given a return date of the 14th of June. So now the current situation is that when I came back from court, my mother-in-law and her pastor came to me and apologized on his behalf. They understand that I'm hurt. We're family at the end of the day. The situation is very hurtful to my husband, as this is his brother, of which I understand. My brother-in-law has a problem of losing his mind and told me that I should cancel the protection order as we're not living at the same residence anymore. Should I listen to them or continue with the protection order? How does this work? We've got her on the line, and she will. I think her name is Zetu. Zetu is on the line, so she can also, you know, ask those questions, and we can. In fact, you can ask her any questions that you've got. Hi, Zetu. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. You're
my I'm all right, thank you. Is your brother-in-law still at it?
Pardon?
Is he still at it? Your brother-in-law? Oh, your line is bad. Your line is bad. Okay, let me do this in the meantime. Let's try and sort your line out, but let's go back to Putumbelelo and ask you to, you know, just go in on this one. What do you think?
All right. I've read the letter that Josh sent to me yesterday. Mm-hmm. First of all, there are three rights that offense, that were constitutional rights that were violated. The first one is the right to freedom of person and security, mm-hmm. when the person posted. Mm-hmm. The second one is the right to human dignity and the right to privacy, like spitting on her and calling her whatever she called. Mm. She should have acted immediately on the protection order without waiting. It's her right to do so. Not only the protection order, also criminally. There are other criminal aspects here.
Okay.
And the law is clear on domestic violence that just because you open an order, a case for protection order, we are not barred to open criminal cases. Here, there's a criminal case of common assault. The spitting of her is common assault as well as pushing, you know.
Okay.
And then there's the one of criminal injury, the things that he said to her. Those are two separate charges that she can lay separately from the protection order. What was disturbing to me was that the mother-in-law and the pastor came only after the case was opened, not before. And secondly, it's not the complainant, it's not the respondent, the brother-in-law who came to apologize, it's some other people. Why does he not take ownership and to do two things, apologize and then undertake not to do this thing again? You see?
Well,
that's my take. I'm being brutally frank with her. She must go ahead with the protection order until such time he apologizes. If he does that before the 24th, then she can exercise the option of withdrawing it. If he apologizes and undertakes not to do it again, otherwise it's going to continue all the time. The mother-in-law and priest must talk to the respondent, not to the victim. Thank you.
Okay, so what would happen if he does apologize? Right, he comes back and says, okay, I'm sorry. I get he doesn't do this when he's drunk. When he's sober, he only does it when he's drunk. So now he's going to come to her because, of course, he's going to be sober and come and say, you know, I'm so sorry I did this and I'll never do it again. Correct?
Yeah.
And then, obviously, he's sober. He then does it again. Then what? And gonna go when you've dropped the case. So what happens?
Okay.
Then?
Even if he didn't apologize, let me mention this. She can, for safety's sake, get the order on her side so that if he changes his mind, behavior-wise, she can have it implemented. The Domestic Violence Act was changed on the 14th of April, 2023. Mm. Last yesterday, it was its first day anniversary. Mm. There is no alignment between the law and the practice because that Domestic Violence Amendment was a measure by the government to ensure that this thing of domestic violence is arrested. For instance, if you care to know, courts are supposed to be open with clerks and magistrates ready to hear urgent matters.
Mm.
But if you can look around, there's no court that is open, there's no clerk or magistrate ready to receive urgent matters. That is what the amendment says. And if you're arrested, you can't be released on bail. You must wait until you go to court. So those things, you know, are revelations that people are not aware of. I am saying, therefore, if something happens now,
mm-hmm.
She must exhaust the urgent matters afforded to her by the amendment of April 2023 of having her arrested. Now you can have an interim order issued as well as a warrant of arrest at the same time. It will lie in the file until it is served on him. You don't have to wait until the police come back, etc., etc. So those things are there in the domestic violence. If in the amendment, if someone says something differently, it's not true. The law says you can act urgently.
Okay.
So in short, if something happens tonight from here, the person she must go to a magistrate in terms of the magistrate, clerk of the court, police and magistrate. The order will be issued today if there's a reasonable belief of harm. And the person can be arrested if he's served. However, as I said, there's a misalignment between the law and the practice down there. There is no court that is open. No police will act and say we're taking you to court or the clerk of the court. All of them are at home watching, ready to watch Generations.
Whoa.
Thank you.
All of Generations. Okay. Zetu?
Watching Generations at 8 o'clock. They won't be in court.
Zetu?
If I can be cynical.
Hello, Zetu?
Hello.
Hi.
Yes.
Okay, yeah, your line is much better. We are good.
I'm fine,
thank you. Okay, explain. So where do you stand now with this?
Okay, at the moment, I'm no longer going to my in-laws because I don't want to see him. I don't want him to swear at me again. I'm just avoiding him. I'm avoiding this thing to happen again.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Have you dropped the case?
No, I haven't.
Okay.
I still haven't dropped it. we have to go again in court on the 14th of June.
What's your mother-in-law saying? Why is she saying you must drop it? Besides the fact that King Wanahake and clearly Wamu support.
She's saying I must drop it now because we are no longer staying in the same residence. My husband and I have moved out.
What is your husband saying about this?
He's also saying the same thing now. They both believe that he wasn't like this before. This is something that it's his mind, like he's sick.
So why don't they take him to a psychiatric hospital? No, if he's sick, then he must go to a psychiatric hospital. You can't be his punching bag just because he's sick.
They say he doesn't want to. Like, there was a time where I called my brother to come and take him, like, to help because he has a car.
Mm-hmm.
So they took him to the hospital, and then the following day, he discharged himself.
Oh, no.
Can I say something?
Yes, go ahead.
Can I say something?
Yes, please.
If he's sick, I don't know why his sickness is selective. Why is he targeting you and not the rest of the people that are with you? Secondly, you've got the right to peace of mind. It's called living. Every minute that you are having here on earth, you must live. You must have that peace of mind. When someone deprives you of that minute of peace of mind, it means you are not living. You are living parallel. By getting that protection order, he is not going to be arrested. He'd only be arrested if he violates it after getting the order. Just get the order as a shield, as a safety valve, just in case in future he comes there, then you can go to the police and say he violated it. Tell your family that by getting the protection order, you're not having him arrested. Unless he breaks the word that he gives to your family or to you, they must work on him not to do that. So it has nothing to do with being arrested. It has everything to do for you to be protected for any future action that he might take unlawful against you. Then you'll have peace of mind if you got that paper put somewhere.
Does that
the house.
Does that make sense to you?
Yes.
So,
it does.
Do you have anybody else that's supporting you in the house, in the family?
No, it's just me. I haven't even told my family.
Why not?
I just don't want to cause conflict.
Wait. Conflict for who? Conflict is caused already. That was not your responsibility. The conflict is caused. So who are you protecting here?
I feel like it's going to be big, and my brothers will also want to fight with him. You know, I'm avoiding that.
So my question is, who are you protecting here? Are you protecting you, or are you protecting him, the perpetrator?
I'm protecting the family.
Which family? Yours?
Not to fight.
But I'm sure you can tell your family that, well, listen, I've got a protection order. If it continues, I will let you guys know, and then you can come in and fight. No?
Okay.
Is that not something that you can? My only worry, why I'm asking you, who knows? And, you know, the last thing we want, and this is what happens with a lot of protection orders. People have protection orders, but remember, that does not stop anybody from continuing. Some people are evil. And they will still go ahead and do it. And your family will be left thinking, how marawayang as chelanga, if only we had known, we could have. Now, you are also saying, you see, because right now they can take advantage of you. Your husband's family can take advantage of you because they know that nobody else knows. So it's become a secret, yakundlung, to your detriment, just by the way. Kis secret yakundlung to your detriment. Thoughts? No? Yeah? No?
Yes.
I hear you.
Okay.
Can I say something? Please tell your family. Sit them down and tell them. My worry about this, you might end up harming yourself because you're protecting people who are not supposed to be protected. Tell your family. You must have someone on your side. The families can meet and talk about this. As long as they see that you are on your own, there's no family. This thing is going to happen all over and again, and then you will reach a point of no return and do something harmful to yourself. And we don't want that. You seem like a nice person, but please, there is no love that is unconditional. Don't harm, don't do this to yourself. You deserve much more than this. tell them that you are going to go ahead with the protection order as a safety valve, and then tell your mother or father if they are living. Sit them down and tell them what is happening, but tell them that it's under control so that things do not go out of control.
Yes.
Okay? Thank you very much.
Yes. All right. Thank you very much, Zethu. All the best to you, yeah?
Okay, thank you.
All right, all the best.
Are you happy, Zethu? Are you happy?
Yes. Yes, thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, let's go to Sabelo. Sabelo wants to touch on the IEC and former President Zuma story. Sabelo, hi.
Hi, thank you, Mapaseka, and thank you to your guest as well.
Yeah.
Mapaseka, having listened to you and your guest, I think I'm sold on supporting the rationale behind why the IEC is objecting on this one, having listened to your guest. And also, maybe I think I'm just deducing this from a guest as well. I think maybe the onus to ensure that all candidates comply with the constitution lies with the political parties, actually, if I listen correctly.
Yes.
But now the question one will have to ask, when it lies with the political parties when they register their individual candidates, what happens then when when the political parties fail in their registration to ensure they vet their candidates to comply with all of these constitutional requirements? That's the first part. Who then takes the responsibility there on after? But also the other question for me, which confuses me, is if this is a constitutional matter, why does the trigger then have to be an objection from an individual and not an issue that happens automatically from the IEC side and so on? Because, for example, there are a lot of other criteria. If you go to the Section 47 that was quoted, that says these people are disqualified from contesting, because my challenge is when it relies on an objection as a trigger to remove someone from the list, there could be a lot of other people from the 15,000 people who are registered to be candidates that will filter through the cracks, because no one has raised an objection against those names. So for me, that is really the question, because I'm concerned in terms of what really happens to those specific individuals. For example, we know there was a case, I think in Johannesburg, where there was a mayor voted in but who is sequestrated, and that there had to be a whistleblower for them to find those. How many of those 15,000 people have criminal records longer than 15 months without options of fine? How many of them are sequestrated? And all of those, how many of, because even also the issue of having to be a registered voter, we know that one, at least the IEC deals with that one automatically, but no one goes and says, IEC, it's not in your jurisdiction to remove someone because they are not a registered voter. And for me, that's a disqualifier, no different from this disqualifier of saying someone must be sentenced for a period of longer than 12 months. But for me, the issue is, why must this issue depend on an objection? Isn't there other mechanisms that maybe can be utilized in law? Of course, this might be a new terrain for all of us, you know. And listen, I just have those questions. Maybe your guests could be able to clarify me and many other South Africans on these issues.
Thank you so
because
much.
I think the other narrative that some individuals will paint this as if it is an issue of a specific witch hunt of a specific individual. But how do we then ensure there is a broader blanket approach, you know? Because even now in Parliament, you might be surprised that we could be sitting with others just because there was no objection against them. Sorry, another issue on that Section 47, actually, I'm sorry, it's a one point, last point. On Section 47, it further says, I think the second or the last point there says, if a person is not a member or ceases to be a member of a political party that referred them to assembly or legislature, that person cannot be also a member of parliament. And we know the individual in question has also gone out publicly to say that they are themselves are not a member of the political party that has nominated them, but they are just going to support that political party. How do we then, how does that also then come into play on this issue? Thanks, and listen, Mapaseka.
Thank you so much.
I hope I was audible.
Thank you so much. You were definitely audible and very good questions. Let's go for it. Bumelelo?
Okay, the good points. Number one, the IEC has to be proactive in all the lists or submissions made to them in terms of the Electoral Act. It must go through them with a comb. the impression is given that it is reactive or reacting to objection. It's its primary duty to ensure that everyone complies. But I'm sure because of the nature of the sensitivity of this, you see, they notified the public that there was an objection. It's their primary duty to make sure that everyone complies. Once they keep quiet, it's assumed that all is well, until someone says, but no, it was not right for you to admit so-and-so. So the impression is given that there was an objection. The IEC should have picked that up. And quietly, they do that in all those where they would be disqualified, just as it doesn't reach the media. You understand?
Okay.
It's their primary objective to do. They it's their duty to do that, to go through a fine comb on each and every matter that comes. For instance, the Act says that the chief electoral officer has got the right to not to register a party if its name is misleading or confusing in a material way with a long-standing party. With a long-standing party, it's the responsibility of the chief electoral officer to do that without waiting for an objection. I hope I'm answering it. So it's not reactive; it's proactive. But it's just the nature of this political party, the person concerned, that this thing is now morphed into this. You understand? Thank you.
Okay. Got you there. I think we've got some voice notes that we want to go to as well. Let's go there.
Good evening. Osma Paseka. Papa K here, by the way. Happy belated birthday.
Thank you.
Osma Paseka. Concerning KCR, me ole blelangayo. Ke blame the husband if they are married to her partner. If they are married, the guy must take a stand. You cannot allow your brother and then again when your partner goes and open a protection order, you say to her she must go and abolish it. No. It doesn't work that way. So that man, he's standing with his brother. He doesn't think for this poor woman. And you can hear that this woman is under pressure. She's scared. There are things that are happening besides this there that we don't know, that this woman is not talking about, but only about the being spat at and all that.
Thank you so much for sharing that. And also, it sounds like she's very young. You know, from what I'm gathering, she's very young. And you are correct. You know, she is not being supported by her partner. And that for me is a big thing. Because in the first place, he should not be keeping quiet when this is happening. He should not be walking out when this happens. And if you know that this is happening when your partner is kohenu lwena, then you're going to do one of two things. When you go there, you're going to protect her and be there with her. Or you're actually going to say, I'm not going to come home. Me and my wife, we are both not going to come home until you can behave when a brother. So somehow, I think you are correct in saying that she is not being supported by anyone. And this, for me, is why I think it's so important for her to also let her family know what is happening and how far things are. So that it's clearer and it's easily understood by the family or what's happening. The last thing you want is to go to your family quite at the end and say to them, by the way, it's not working out. And then they wonder what happened. You know, unless if you have the type of family that is not, be able to be mature about things and behave, you know, because again, if you are going to inform them, this is what's happening, that's what, you're not saying to them, have again, ibang snacks, or, you know, that type of thing. But you are going to also make them aware, hore, you can't just treat me that way. I have family as well. I have people that love me and take care of me.
That's correct.
All right. Let's go to another voice note.
Good evening, Osma Paseka. The thing is, this family is just trying to protect their own child.
Mm-hmm.
They don't care about Umakoti, what happens to her and everything.
Mm.
She must not drop those charges.
Mm.
Because right now they are apologizing because she took action. Why didn't they take any action before she was assaulted?
Mm.
She must not drop those charges because they are only watching out for their own. You know, a family can even protect a rapist or even a murderer just because it's their own family. But when it comes to an outsider, especially if it's a daughter-in-law, then you're on your own. So right now, as you can see, she's on her own. The family is not protecting her at all. She must not drop those charges, I beg her.
Agree with you totally then.
Uh-huh.
And also, her husband's not a man, man. No, Mpumelelo, he needs to stand up. You know, he needs to actually be a man. He's not... Ooh, he's not a man. He's just a little boy.
His invisibility is very visible.
Yeah, and very loud. Hey? Very loud.
Yeah. It says a lot. Yeah. He should stamp his authority on this, on the family. Say, look, I chose her. I'm not married to, she's not married to everyone, even if it's perceived to be. This is my wife, first and foremost. And why is this brother, when he's drunk, acts only, you know, towards her? What's wrong? You understand? But beside the point, the man should take his stance. Even if there's a mother, there are brothers, there's a pastor, take your stance on the side of your wife, especially as she has been protecting that family by not telling your own family.
Mother and pastor, very, very silly. And the brother and the husband, by the way.
The pastor should be praying for the brother-in-law, should be praying for him to stop what he's doing. Yep. Instead, he's going to the wrong person.
But also in his prayer, he should also be praying for her to be okay, because this is not only damaging physically, but also emotionally, mentally. Yes. You know, this is stressful. All right,
you must follow up on her maybe next week just to find out whether she took any step. I'm just worried about her, really.
Yeah, no, it is worrying.
I'm worried. Follow up next week.
We'll definitely follow up on that. All right, let's have a chat with Zola. Hey, Zola. Oh, Zola, we have literally 2 minutes. Let's go.
Hello.
Hi, Zola. You've got 2 minutes. Let's go.
Yes, thank you. Good evening and good evening to your guest. Mapaseka, may your guest please address the issue of AfriForum versus the late Winnie Mandela in 2004. Whereby they were objecting to having a member of parliament. Thank you.
Okay, that's an interesting one. Bulelo?
If I can recall, it was a situation where there was the issue was about a suspended sentence. I'm not quite sure about the facts exactly. Can you elaborate? I remember they wanted to disqualify her because of a suspended sentence, but that was overruled. Didn't follow that up well. You can just elaborate.
We've just lost him. But I wanted to also understand.
I'm not very sure, but I know that it was about a suspended sentence which was not taken into account. Then she was allowed to be a member of the national. I didn't follow those facts correctly, because to me, I don't think they are applicable here. All right.
But I think it was just an interesting one to also note, because if it's been done before,
I'll look into it.
All right. Thank you very, very much for being part of this. It's almost time for us to go. So just before we do, let's share your numbers for people who'd like to get a hold of you.
Okay. I'm in Port Elizabeth, Okabeha, 084-959-0925. 084-959-0925. I'm not afraid to give you my number. Life is short. We only have one life. Thank you.
Oh, it's going to be one long life answering phone calls. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Bye.
Thank you so much for being on the line, at least for talking to us. His number again, Gampumelelo, 084-959-0925. If you have any interest in communicating with him for legal matters or anything other, around there. Thank you very much for being part of this hour. Time for the news with Rosen Khreef. Remember, when we come back, we will be talking about Monday Menday, right? Did I mention what we're talking about? I didn't mention what we'll be talking about. Okay. So we'll be talking to Anele Machisi. We also have Pastor Thando Melani on the line. And we're talking about how to build a man. You know, how does a man build himself in terms of being true and authentic and being confident in himself? How does that happen? That'll be happening just after the 8 o'clock news right here on Radio 2000.
If you missed it, catch the rewind on radio2000.co.za.